Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. Children's book illustrator and comic book artist Lizzie Stewart, when drawing herself, draws herself walking, striding confidently across the urban scene. Her latest book, called Walking Distance, is a personal account of the way she sees her life out and about on foot. She argues that walking is the clearest way to participate in life. Her work touches on themes of how women are observed in the city, both in reality and on film, as well as revealing insights into her creative process and her own ways of working. Recorded in and around the garden surrounding the Hornemann Museum in southeast London on a February day in 2020. We're in the Hornemann, which is a pretty safe surrounding.
Yep.
Now, I carefully sort of say that because a lot of what your book is about is how confident you feel when you're out walking.
Yes.
The book itself, called Walking Distance.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you choose that?
Well, the slightly disappointing answer is that I couldn't think of a title for a really long time, and I asked a friend to read it, and he came up with Walking Distance, which suddenly was the perfect title, and I didn't have to do any work. I suppose it works because it's the idea of kind of the distance that I need to work through thoughts, I suppose, or the idea that walking distance might be a measure of how I figure things out.
First of all, for listeners who haven't encountered Lizzie Stewart before, yes, Perhaps we ought to say why this book is somewhat different.
This is Words and Pictures.
Words and Pictures, and a lot of pictures.
A lot of pictures. So, yes, primarily I'm an illustrator, and I've been working in illustration for about 10 years. I think people, if anyone knows my work, they know it for pictures, for picture books for children, and I do kind of comics and make prints. So it was a bit of a departure.
But the other thing is, it's predominantly pictures of you.
It is predominantly pictures of me, which is mortifying.
Is it mortifying?
It's faintly mortifying.
Okay, so.
But I think I kind of, maybe I address it slightly in the book of, like, why do I keep, I can't keep drawing myself over and over again. I find that if I draw myself, I do tend to draw myself walking, so it was that was sort of the thing that kicked it all off. But it's a lot of pictures of me doing not much. It was a personal project to begin with. It was never really meant to be a book. And things escalated.
Well, I'm very glad it did become a book because, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I've now read it three times. But also I've actually really enjoyed looking at the illustrations and then thinking about what you've written about. So what I was kind of interested in was, did you write the text first, or were you prompted to write something because you'd started drawing something and the drawing revealed something more that you wanted to express in a different way?
I do the same with picture books, in that I am drawing and writing at the same time from the start, usually. I find that if I get stuck switching from writing to drawing or drawing to writing, usually gets me over whatever obstacle is in the way. So if I can't figure out how to write it, I can usually figure out how to draw it. So I started with the book opens talking about women in film and a particular kind of scene of women walking that I really enjoy that crops up in lots of films in the 80s in particular. And I started with that and then kind of got through writing this section and then drew for a little while to figure out where it went next. And then wrote a bit, and it kind of, I don't know, I hope that's vaguely, you can kind of spot that from the book, that hopefully the two things happen in tandem.
The women in films comes,
yes,
back twice more.
It does come back, yes.
And it comes back in an addendum, so
it does.
So you suddenly had an,
yeah,
afterthought.
Yes. I'm always self-editing, just always adding, oh, but this, and don't, oh, that as well.
One aspect of the book, and the book actually reveals many aspects about your own life, but one aspect that comes out is about women walking.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost as though you're saying you're walking in a kind of different time or a different zone or a different sphere. when you go walking? And you walk for every day, you walk?
Yes, all the time. I suppose...
You're not a car driver.
I've never driven a car, ever. And after leaving, I grew up in Devon. After that, I lived in Edinburgh, and then I lived in London, which are two cities that you absolutely don't need to drive in. And you barely, certainly in Edinburgh, you barely need to get public transport. So it's always been a big part of day-to-day life. I suppose when I'm writing about women walking, it would be nice to write just about the experience of walking, but it is fundamentally ever so slightly different. When you read kind of those early 20th century accounts of people who would declare themselves a flâneur, you know, people who walk in cities, and they're men, for starters, because a woman couldn't walk around early 20th century London and not be considered mad, completely mad. There's a really amazing book by Lauren Elkin called Flâneuse, where she's sort of addressing that kind of very phenomenon of how it is different to walk around a city as a woman when writing the book, to acknowledge that there are interruptions, I suppose, sometimes. It's not constant, but the interruption of walking around, of being observed, and I think there's lots of great writing, but John Berger in Ways of Seeing wrote incredibly on the way that women grow up knowing that they are being watched on some level. It's a thing that you're conscious of, so it's always present, even when you're not being interrupted or not being heckled or any of the things that we've become much better at talking about recently.
Yeah, okay, so, I mean, that's a clear area, is that you say that women in films, they're depicted in such a way that they're never victims of verbal or sexual abuse. Occasionally they're stalked.
Yes.
But you do say how uncomfortable, anxious-making, insidious this kind of male taunting is all the time.
I didn't really want to focus on it, and I don't want to make any declarative statements about it's always like this or men are like this, because it's obviously not true. But it's more that you have a thing that you're always carrying in your head, that if you're walking home at night, you walk faster, or you're always crossing the road because you don't want anyone behind you. Like my first week at university, someone told me to carry my keys between my fingers when I walked across the meadows in Edinburgh, and that had never crossed my mind, that I would need to have a weapon for walking home. When I talk about the women in film, and I'm talking about like Meryl Streep in Kramer vs. Kramer, or I've gone completely blank, Amy Irving in Crossing Delancey, like these films where they're kind of bundled in coats walking down busy streets in New York.
Yes, what is that thing about window shopping that these stars do? Meryl Streep does it a lot.
She is often, like, it's often her reflection in a window as she's walking.
I'm far more cynical than you are. I think that's product placement. We're selling coats and handbags. Why is that section or that scene allowed to exist in a movie? It has to be there. So what is it that those women in those stories have to be observed in the street doing?
I mean, those shots in the films are just sort of filler, you know, 3 seconds to get us from one place to another. I think I like them because they're just on their own, and I relate to that because the way that I get from one place to another is to walk. So it's just this moment that I relate to, except, you know, infinitely more glamorous or whatever it is. Then at the end of the book, yeah, I have to say, it's all very well me kind of romanticising these images, these shots, but they're not really reflective of what life is like for most people, and for a lot of people the idea of walking through a city is much harder. So rather than saying these scenes aren't real because the women aren't getting abused, that's not what I mean. It's more like, but I have to acknowledge that it's a movie and it's not always going to represent your experience, I suppose.
Let's talk a little bit more about the walking and the creativity and the thinking and the walking distance. Is there a process that you actually go through? Do you decide at some point where, oh, I've got to go out and go for a walk? just to, you know, shake off the energy in the studio or, yes. or whatever. Is
yes.
that what happens?
I get very rattly if I've been indoors all day and, you know, if I've got really stuck into doing some work, but it gets to 4 o'clock and I've not been outside, I feel quite odd. There's the journey to and from the studio, but as a rule, I do find that stretching my legs also gives you a bit more space.
I mean, what I like about walking, what I often say to people about walking is, and correct me if I'm talking nonsense, especially if you walk a route frequently, is how much you notice and observe about that route. And there are some times when you walk that route and you'll be more observant, and other times when your mind is somewhere completely different, you can't actually recall anything.
Yeah.
You've just done the journey. You seem to be... Well, I got here without realising.
Yeah.
So is that something that happens for you?
Yeah, definitely. When I'm walking, I'm testing out phrases more than anything, kind of trying to work out sentences.
Is it the text you're trying to work out?
Yeah,
or is
usually.
Is it the illustration?
Weirdly, if I need to work out the images, I go swimming. So there's two different...
And you've just told me your studio is adjacent to the swimming pool.
Exactly, so I get stuck, I just kind of roll into the pool next door.
Fantastic.
It's very convenient. But I've never really thought about it. I definitely separate those two things, that swimming is for drawing and walking is for...
Are you one of these people who's never without a sketch pad?
No. No, I used to be. I wish I was. I used to be very good at keeping a sketchbook, and drawing was very much a leisure activity and a thing that I loved and I needed to do every day, all day. But it changes when you make your one true love your job. Your relation to it shifts. And my ability to keep a sketchbook has kind of disappeared. Because when I get home, the thought of sketching is like a real wrench. But if I go away, I always keep a sketchbook when we travel. I like to draw then, because it's kind of untethered. There's no deadline and no one's going to check if it looks okay. So then I can really enjoy it.
Now, I mean, what's intriguing too is because you write the book in the first and third person.
Mm-hmm.
And you've drawn a lot of pictures of yourself
yeah.
walking. And you talk about the fact that you can occasionally step outside and observe yourself walking.
Yeah.
So do you like what you see?
I think it's how I recognise myself. I think that's the person that you are. You're that woman walking in a big coat and a scarf. It's when I feel most competent. I know I've only lived in London for 8 years, but I think I know quite a lot of it, and I can walk with confidence around most places and know where I'm going.
It's quite exciting knowing
those. Which is exciting.
Isn't it?
Yeah, especially if you're from... I'm from Plymouth, but the suburbs of Plymouth, so I never really had that experience of a city before. Because if you wanted to go anywhere, you had to get a bus or a lift from my parents, because I didn't drive. So figuring out that this is how I get around, this is when I do my good thinking, this is when I get to see things that I find interesting. Like, I've seen a house down there that's kind of modernist looking, which sticks out amongst the street, and I want to go and look at the shape of that house. I find that like genuinely buoying and kind of reassuring, because so much of the rest of the time I'm doubting things and questioning things and wondering if I've done the right thing or said the right thing or whatever it is.
Okay, well, now that was something that comes out, is
yes.
that you sort of say you're surrounded by peers,
yes,
and many of them are living a different life at a different speed in a different
yeah.
time zone, almost in a different place, but they are actually in your space, you know, the your spaces interlink, like Venn diagrams, they cross
yeah.
over, whatever. I mean, this is something I find, because I walk a lot. Most of the people I talk to, most of my neighbours, don't have a clue about how they can walk from one place to another. And yet, here I read about someone who, yes, expresses these sort of anger about how bloody awkward men can be, how you can feel vulnerable in lots of places, even the most familiar places, you can feel vulnerable.
Yep.
And yet, you have an urge, a drive to get out and walk. I thought that came out so clearly. So do you
yeah.
feel kind of detached from your friends who are driving around?
Actually, because a lot of my friends are freelance artists, they're not driving anywhere. But I've always lived in South London, and when I moved to London, lots of my friends lived not in South London, and there was that kind of much joked about north-south divide, but was kind of real, that people felt that travelling south was a bit of a stretch, so I became very good at kind of whizzing back and forth across London and working out when I was going, and I never wanted to shut off bits of the city because I'm still so excited by it. It's still such a treat and a delight to find new bits of it, and I feel sad that maybe a sense of comfort or caution limits stops people from discovering these new ends, these new corners.
Dare I ask you, are you a bit of an anorak when it comes to walking? You know, do you know which carriage on the underground to sit in so you're closest to the exit?
I suppose I'm not kind of fanatical about it, in that I don't want to be too rigid about, quite happy to get on a bus or a tube. My dad would definitely say that I know which carriage to get on, but I think it's just, that's just been dazzling good luck that any time he's been in London, I've somehow managed, with the exception of getting off at Brixton on the Victoria line, which I do know how to do.
Yeah, I mean, some of these illustrations are fantastic. I mean, some are sort of like slight sketches, and others are the full Monty. So
yes.
The whole book is in monotone, isn't it? Apart from the cover.
There's a couple of bits of colour, but very muted.
Yes.
Very muted.
Items of fashion.
Yep, some clothing.
Spectacle frames occasionally, yep. Maybe. Yep. That was your choice, or was that the publisher's choice?
No, that was my choice. In pitch books, obviously, you have to be... Well, not you don't have to be, but I tend to work with lots of colour, and this was trying to do something different for a different audience. And so it's mostly drawn in quink, black quink ink, which I really love.
I'm going to say anyone of my age remembers Queen King.
Yeah, exactly.
You're half my age, so you know, I'm pleased that it's here.
Yeah.
So anyway, here we are. We've stopped outside this property, which is, yeah, as you said, it's kind of like horizontal and vertical lines. The other thing is, I thought okay, there are lots of drawings of yourself walking, but there are also some really lovely images of your surroundings and of buildings and streets. There's a bit of a Rothko in there as well, if I remember rightly. But we won't go into
abstract.
That. But there's lots to choose from. So what about observing the street and drawing and illustrating the street? Is that something that... you do a lot of, and that, because I'm imagining with your children's illustration that doesn't happen that often.
Yes, you try to limit kind of grey, damp-looking domestic street scenes. I really love drawing kind of everyday locations, and like days like this where it's kind of it's grey and everything's kind of mulchy and sludgy.
We're really lucky today, actually, because. The rain has stopped. It wasn't very heavy anyway, but
no,
the rain has stopped. It's not so cold that I can't hold a microphone, which I've had on occasion. But also, yes, it's got that sort of, I don't know, all one tone quality,
yeah,
hasn't it?
It's very British weather, and it's very, I find it quite nostalgic. It reminds me of growing up. It reminds me of Plymouth, which is very wet.
Well, of course, we're up high. We're on probably one of the most less well-known views, actually. A lot of people don't actually know that Hornwyn commands an incredible view.
Yeah, just walked around here a couple of days ago and did kind of, well, from the cemetery to One Tree Hill to Crystal Palace. There's some good views along the way.
So there's a quote here which I thought, wow, I like walking because it takes me out of my head and into the world. Walking is the clearest way for me to participate in life, and that's the best I can do.
Yes, I stand by that, I think.
Wow, I thought, there we are, that's a profound thing. That thing about the clearest way for me to participate in life. So, life is at street level? Is a woman walking independently?
Of those things. It's
gives you a kind of freedom of the city?
Yeah, I think because my job is very solitary, it's quite introspective, it's a lot of noodling around in my own head and working out ideas, and it's also a luxury job. It's a job that not everyone would get to do. It's kind of special, I suppose, being an illustrator, and it's important as a contrast to not always be in my head, so to get out, yeah, see what's going on. But also, I think I'm very scared of retreating. I suppose particularly right now when things aren't going brilliantly in the world and there's a lot that I don't enjoy or don't agree with that's happening in this country and many, many other countries. And there's definitely a tendency within me to just retreat and just to kind of read and draw and not really engage with it and do that. So it's important for me to kind of go outside.
Is there going to be another walking book? Yeah, it's a couple of years, really, since you began it.
Yep. I don't know if I'll do another one about walking for a while. I don't think I want to write about myself again. I think that was very much a moment in time, possibly the kind of most self-indulgent, self-reflective, but early 30s moment in time where you kind of just want to look at yourself. I don't think I'll go back to it for a while, but I'm glad it exists in the way that it does. I think I was terrified about it coming out because it was so personal and because it was all about me and it was not what I normally do. But I'm very happy. Avery Hill, the publishers, did a really nice job and I'm relieved that it is the way that it is.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. In this episode, you've heard from Lizzie Stewart. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we'd love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the Talking Walking website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Written, recorded and produced by Andrew Stark of Rethinking Cities Limited, our artwork is designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music is composed by Simon Sanders of EZtronic.